I'm Catherine Allen, and today we're talking about domestic violence and guns. Our guest is Dave Warren, a director at Unity House, where victims of intimate partner violence receive a wide range of services. In full disclosure, I should report that in addition to being a WOOC news correspondent, I chair the board at Unity House. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you so much for inviting me here today, Catherine.
So let's start with some basics. Who are typical victims of domestic violence?
Sure. So anybody can be a victim of domestic violence. However, women are disproportionately impacted by intimate partner violence issues. This includes people who are in heterosexual relationships, same-sex relationships, folks who are married, folks who are just dating, folks who have experienced other types of behaviors like stalking would be considered part of this population if it's in an intimate partner context.
Well, that makes me go to my next question is when we say abuse, it's broader than just getting hit, right?
Sure.
What are various kinds of abuse?
Sure. Domestic violence is really an umbrella term for a number of different activities that could compromise abuse. So the most prevalent in our minds is physical abuse. That's what we think of when we hear about domestic violence or intimate partner violence. But really, there are a ton of different types of abuse types that victims and survivors of domestic violence encounter every day. Those include sexual abuse. In an interesting study, more than 90% of victims reported being financially abused in their intimate partner relationships. There's emotional abuse, psychological abuse, stalking behaviors. A lot of coercion has been reported. And all of these factors or all of these abuse types can be chosen by the abuser to demonstrate power and control over their victim. Every case is different, and the abuser will choose different types to his advantage or her advantage to really demonstrate that power and control over the victim, and knows how to demonstrate that power and control through their relationship.
So I think some of our listeners are probably asking, why don't people leave? Why doesn't a person leave the first time they're stalked or the first time they're hit or the first time their abuser says, no, you have to turn your paycheck over to me? Why?
That's a great question, and a question that a number of people ask, particularly friends and family members who just don't understand what's happening with their loved one and why they're not leaving. But there are a number of different reasons why somebody would choose to stay in a relationship. And in some cases, it's just safer for the victim to stay in that relationship.
How can it be safer?
I look at an instance where an abuser might have a firearm in the house. Mm-hmm. And when a victim is leaving the relationship, it's well established that that's the most dangerous time for them. And if they leave, they very well could be killed, be a victim of homicide. So in a lot of cases, particularly when there are firearms in the home, a very detailed safety plan needs to be established for that victim to escape in the most safe way possible.
So we have some gun laws on the books about who can have a gun and who cannot. How does that relate to people who are known to be domestic abusers?
Sure. So the current gun laws, in effect, really focus on felony crimes. So a domestic abuser who's been convicted of a felony crime often has their handguns seized at the time of conviction. And that law really serves to take guns away from violent domestic violence perpetrators, which has proven to be helpful. But, you know, there's a lot of different domestic violence crimes that only rise to misdemeanor or violation level in New York State. And under those circumstances and under the current law, firearms in those situations aren't covered.
So there's a new bill out that Governor Cuomo has proposed. And is that going to be a fix? Can you tell us about what that bill proposes?
Absolutely. So the bill that Governor Cuomo is talking about and is looking to have move through the legislature in its coming session really has three different components to it that would impact domestic violence perpetrators who've been convicted of a domestic violence crime. So the first thing that would be impacted is that all domestic violence convictions would result in the loss of firearms. So when whereas the current law focuses on felony convictions, mm-hmm. this will include lower level types of behaviors that abusers are convicted on. But that being said, they're still very serious behavior. So an example of a misdemeanor in New York State is criminal obstruction of breathing. That's a misdemeanor crime in New York State. Yet we know in the context of a domestic violence situation, that type of behavior is very, very dangerous for a victim and can escalate to lethality very quickly. So being inclusive of lower level crimes, which are dangerous and often fit in a pattern of escalating behavior, can be really helpful to a victim who's nervous or scared or about firearms in the home and their abuser having access to firearms.
Okay, so the first piece would broaden the number of people that would have guns taken away.
Yes.
Okay. What's the second piece?
So the second piece is that rifles and shotguns are also required to be surrendered to law enforcement. This was a segment of firearms that wasn't covered by the current law. They were really focusing on handguns, which handguns are the number one type of firearm used in domestic violence murders. But not all the time. So covering these other types mm-hmm. of firearms is a very logical thing, just to ensure that anybody with a firearm, a perpetrator of domestic violence with a firearm, you know, all of those firearms are covered. It's nonsensical, really, not to cover all of them if the goal is to avoid domestic violence homicide mm-hmm. at the intersection of firearms.
Okay. So what's the third one?
The third one is that for an order of protection, judges must order a defendant to surrender any type of firearm. Previously, with the current law, it was more of a discretionary kind of thing for judges to include that, and it wasn't always being requested for a number of different reasons. But now it will be more proceduralized for judges to be mandated to take those firearms away. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot less judicial discretion with regard to removing firearms. Mm-hmm. So it really bridges some of the gaps mm-hmm. that have been developing or that we've noticed with the current law, and bridges some of them to ensure that our laws are effective mm-hmm. and that we're helping as many DV victims as possible. Mm-hmm.
So I probably should have asked this earlier, but of the percentage of women who are killed in an intimate partner situation, what percentage of those are with guns?
Sure. So of females killed with a firearm, almost 2/3 of them were killed by their intimate partners.
With a gun?
With a gun.
Wow. So this could have wide impact.
Absolutely.
Get the guns out of the hands of people that are killing their wives and girlfriends and partners. Well, we'll have to follow that and watch it move through the legislature. It's hard to imagine why somebody would vote against that, but I guess the Second Amendment people would take issue.
Sure.
So in the meantime, before something like this passes, if someone is in an abusive relationship and they're feeling trapped, how do they escape? What's the best advice you could give them?
Sure. And every situation is different and unique, and the abuse types that the victim experiences are unique and individual to their situation. So it's hard to say a catch-all kind of this plan will work for everybody. So one of the first suggestions I would have is really recognizing that the situation is unique and thinking about the safety of the situation is paramount to a successful escape plan, and that each abuse type that the victim is experiencing needs to be thought about in a way that ensures safety when leaving. As I mentioned earlier, leaving an abusive relationship is one of the most dangerous times for a victim, and when we see lethal cases of domestic violence occur. So there are a lot of resources available. One of them is the local domestic violence program in Rensselaer County. That's Unity House of Troy. And At our program, we do a lot of safety planning with victims who are thinking about leaving. And that can be as simple as providing transportation or coming up with a plan to remove some of the belongings from the home. But we really try to think holistically about every single element of leaving, because there's a lot that goes into that. And there's a lot of different considerations, and it's particularly when there are children involved. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks for being with us today. This has been Dave Warren, a service director for the Domestic Violence Services Program at Unity House. They operate a 24-hour domestic violence hotline that you can call anonymously any day, anytime. If you or someone you know needs to talk to a counselor in confidence, you can call 518-272-2370. Thanks for joining us, Dave.
Thank you for having me, Catherine.